Hello, thank you for joining us today. My name is Kayla Verhoeven, and we're going to start off with part one of the pantograph. Today is Thursday, April the 23rd of 2026. Earth Day, rooting for better days. Volunteers gear up to plant trees and improve the environment. ID Jack Alkire, 3 hours ago. Earth Day, Bloomington. Motorists along southbound Interstate 39 entering Bloomington Normal might have noticed several people in bright vests Wednesday, April the 22nd, walking through the grass between highways. In a few years, motorists will see hundreds of trees that they planted for Earth Day of 2026, each of them native to the land now known as Illinois. The trees were planted through the Ecology Action Center's Tree Corps program, which started in 2021 with a goal to plant 10,000 trees a year, said Executive Director Michael Brown. The center has partnered with the Illinois Department of Transportation to reduce flooding around the highway interchanges in McLean County, said Katie Vogler, Education and Outreach Manager. If you think about trees, they've got this big, beautiful canopy, and when the water hits it, it's going to reduce the amount of heavy rain that's going to directly onto the ground by just softening the blow a little bit, she said. Not to mention, they have extended roots. Earth Day planting is just one of many events hosted by the nonprofit's Tree Corps program, Brown said. There are opportunities for volunteers basically every weekend so they can come up and join us and help make an impact with tree planting, he said. They can come help with preparations for that, which we have thousands of tree seedlings that we've got to trim and prune, among many other activities. What to expect? There are a few things to consider when signing up for a tree planting event with the Ecology Action Center, a Pantagaff reporter learned Wednesday. First is personal safety. Volunteers should bring their own water bottles and stay well hydrated. Even though the hot summer temperatures have yet to arrive, the sun does beat down for the few hours needed. Sunscreen, excuse me, is a necessity. Long pants and closed-toed shoes are required and can help keep insects away, and bug spray keep ticks away. Because the terrain may be uneven, boots help provide more stable footing. Beyond that, everything volunteers need is available at the work site, where hundreds of flags are planted in rows marking where a tree will be planted. The Ecology Action Center also brings snack and a water cooler for the volunteers. The center provides the reflective vests, gloves, and the necessary tools, which is primarily a dibble bar, a metal tool with a flat end to dig into and wedge open the ground. On Wednesday morning, Tess Wallace, leader of the Tree Corps program, demonstrated how to use the dibbler bar, plant the seedlings, and then close the hole properly. From there, pairs of volunteers go along the rows of flags, planting a variety of native tree species like white and red oak, swamp oak, hazelnut, American plum, and bitternut, just to name a few. Get outside and enjoy the outdoors. Earth Day was first recognized in the United States in 1970, following a growing movement of environmental activists like Dennis Hayes, teaming with politicians like Wisconsin Senator Gaylord Nelson and U.S. Representative Pete McCloskey from California. That movement led to the creation of Environmental Protection Agency and groundbreaking legislation, including the Clean Air and Clean Water Acts. It also inspired the creation of Normal's Ecology Action Center, Vogler said. At that time, we were doing one-day recycling drives and actually taking the funds from the recycling drives to plant trees at Commonwealth Park in Lake Bloomington, she said. And so, that's something that has always been kind of core for us as an organization, making sure that we're planting trees for carbon sequestration, excuse me, for increased shade, increased pollinator habitat, and all those beautiful things that trees have. Prior to Earth Day of 2026, Tree Corps volunteers have planted more than 32,000 trees at their large volunteer events, Brown said. But then we do smaller ones with local residents that are just free for households, specifically residents in Bloomington or Normal environmental justice areas, he said. Environmental justice areas are places that have historically been disregarded in terms of ecological impact of industry and commercial pollution, Brown said. We give them a free tree. They just have to apply for it, he said. Ecology Action Center takes care of most of the rest of it, including locating underground sewer, water, and power lines. Then, together with the homeowner, we plant that tree, Brown said. But tree planting is just one of the many ways to celebrate Earth Day all year round. The Ecology Action Center has recently introduced the McLean Cleanup Crew, a play on McLean County that goes around once or twice a month picking up trash in the community, he said. People just need to step up and participate, whether it's volunteering or helping out, or just get out and appreciate what there is in our community, Brown said. Get outside. If you're not going to volunteer for a day, then at least just get outside and enjoy the outdoors. In other news, union ISU workers illegal. AFSCME says contractors hired to circumvent strike, Drew Zimmerman, 3 hours ago. Workforce, normal. The American Federation of State, County, and Municipal Employees Council 31 is seeking a declaratory judgment that Illinois State University is violating state statute by hiring professional strike breakers while roughly 350 of its unionized members are on the picket line. According to a lawsuit filed Tuesday evening, AFSCME has identified at least 5 contractors ISU hired to perform work normally performed by members of Local 1110, who have been on strike since April the 8th. This action is viewed by the plaintiff as illegal in an attempt to gain leverage to quote-unquote win the strike. Joining AFSCME, Council 31, in the suit are Local 1110 President Chuck Carver, ISU students Owen McGregor and Sydney Davis, as well as Normal Township Supervisor Crystal Abel, excuse me. According to the Employment of Strikebreakers Act, no person shall knowingly employ any professional strikebreaker in the place of an employee whose work has ceased as a direct consequence of a lockout or a strike, or knowingly contract with a day and temporary labor service agency to provide a replacement for employees during any periods when a lockout or a strike is in progress. The statute defines a professional strike breaker as quote-unquote any person who repeatedly and habitually offers himself for employment on a temporary basis where a lockout or a strike exists to take place of an employee whose work has ceased as a direct consequence of such lockout or strike. An ISU spokesperson did not respond to a request for comment Wednesday morning regarding this lawsuit. Local 1110 has been without a contract since June of 2025. Pay for these building services, grounds, and dining employees starts at $16.60, and most make even less than the living wage standard for a single adult, according to the union. Renee Nessler, staff representative for AFSCME Council 31, submitted a declaration that on April the 14th, she was notified of a social media post from 4M Building Solutions seeking temporary employees 5 days a week starting at $17 an hour. The company advised her that they were hiring for the second and third shifts at ISU for a 5-week temporary project, Nessler reported. Tia Reese, recording secretary for Local 1110, also issued a declaration that on Monday, she observed a woman sweeping in front of the old union building. This work would normally be conducted by a Local 1110 employee. The woman told Reese she worked for a company named Rico and would only be working for a couple of weeks at $20 an hour until the strike was over. The suit argues the whole purpose of the Employment Strikebreakers Act is to ensure a balance of power in labor disputes between employer and their employees or unions. Defendants' illegal conduct could increase the power ISU has in the labor dispute and force the AFSCME to accept a less advantageous collective bargaining agreement, according to this lawsuit. Defendants' illegal conduct will also prolong the labor dispute because ISU can more easily maintain its operations notwithstanding the strike. The suit names ISU President Ann Over Tarhul, Glenn Nelson, Vice President of Finance and Planning, Janice Bonneville, Associate Vice President for Human Resources, and Angie Doolin, Assistant Director for Labor Relations and Academic Employee Relations, as defendants. AFSCME counsel wrote a letter to Tar Heel and ISU's counsel last week stating the use of temporary employees just violates the statute. However, AFSCME received no response to the letter, according to the suit. ISU officials did not immediately respond to a request for comment on Wednesday, but acknowledged receipt of the letter last week. Officials had stated the university follows a state procurement process that ensures it is compliant with this law. In addition to the declaratory judgment of statutory violations, AFSCME Council 31 is also seeking preliminary relief and a permanent injunction barring ISU from continued violations of the Employment of Strikebreakers Act. In other weather-related news, we have a top story spotlight. Tornado aftermath. Storms shatter Bloomington Normal bubble. Cleanup damage assessments continue across McLean County. 19 hours ago. Bloomington. Sally Parry was sheltering in her basement on Friday evening as tornado sirens blared, her cat Claudia calmly at her side while she read last Sunday's edition of the New York Times. When the storms finally passed, her neighbor Caitlin Selman called her to observe the damages in their shared driveway. Jeepers, Parry recalled with a laugh, noticing a fir tree had fallen from her yard and had been quote-unquote caught by a black walnut. It came to rest atop Selman's second level Three Seasons room. No one was hurt, but the damage was minimal. And after an assessment of the downed power lines, rerouting of electricity, and a morning of work from Oak Bros tree care and removal, the neighbors have their driveway back, and Selma's 10-year-old son has a renewed fascination with trees. I'm convinced that he's going to be an arborist because he was so devastated about the trees. And also, when they finally brought all of the equipment in, he sat in our guest room window and watched them move and lift everything up, someone said. He was so impressed. While the others across Bloomington Normal and McLean County continue cleanup in the aftermath of the tornadoes and severe storms that moved through the area last weekend, residents and officials are acknowledging the famed cliche that the Twin Cities are in a protected quote-unquote bubble has become more of a misnomer. The bubble broke, said Kathy Beck, director of McLean County Emergency Management System. We work with National Weather on a daily basis, and Tornado Alley has shifted east, so it is getting closer to us, and we are just going to get more intense weather and more tornadoes. The National Weather Service reported a total of 5 tornadoes in McLean County Friday night, with 3 identified in Bloomington Normal. All tornadoes were classified as EF1, with peak and wind gusts ranging from 90 miles to 110 miles an hour. The Normal Town Council approved a resolution Monday for continued disaster emergency declaration, and the McLean County Board planned to do the same Wednesday afternoon. While debris removal is visible across Bloomington Normal, Beck said coordination efforts are happening behind the scenes at multiple levels of government. County crews surveyed 15 areas across the county and have submitted over 175 reports. Residents and businesses also have been submitting their own damage reports through online portals. As of the early Wednesday afternoon, roughly 239 public reports have been submitted, with an additional businesses' reports still coming in. Those reports are critical, Beck said, as they help determine whether the area qualifies for state or federal assistance. It's really, really important that businesses submit reports, she said. That's going to help us get the assistance. Beck emphasized that residents do not need to wait for insurance adjusters before submitting damage reports, and in cases where a business operates out of a home, both residential and business damages should be reported separately. As assessments wrap up, the county is now compiling data to send to the state, and Beck said the response has shifted from the initial urgency following the storm to more of a structured recovery phase. Things are much calmer now, she said. At the local level, debris removal is being handled by municipal crews. In Normal, both Public Works and Park and Recreation staff have been working extended hours since the storms hit Friday night. "We're called in immediately after the storm," said Ryan Otto, director of the public works for the town of Normal. "We worked Friday night and then all day Saturday and Sunday as well." Otto said Normal is coordinating with the county, other municipalities, and the Illinois Emergency Management Agency, which is helping track costs and resources as part of the disaster responses. Most storm debris collected in Normal is taken to the town's public works facility on Warner Street, where brush is processed into mulch and made available to residents free of charge. Other materials, such as damaged siding, are sent to landfills, while recyclable items are salvaged when possible. Cleanup is expected to take at least 1 to 2 weeks, Otto said, as residents continue clearing debris from private property and work through insurance claims. "There's a lot out there," he said. "We're going to see some over the next week or two as people clean up." Public crews are only able to collect debris placed at the curb, meaning residents must first cut up and move fallen trees from yards. While tree cleanup began Saturday, the bulk of work really started Sunday and was mostly completed after Monday, said Steve Laning, forester of the town of Normal. But a few odds and ends remained. Laning and a crew of four were clearing felled branches Tuesday at Franson Natural Area, a small park off of Rab Road in North Normal. "Friday's storms ranked, quote-unquote, pretty high up there as far as I have been up here with this town. Just a lot of large trees uprooted," Laning said. "The town first prioritizes removing obstacles from infrastructure," said fellow forester Randy Thorndike, "and if electrical lines are down, they need the power company dispatched to the area first. Once they have made roadways safe and cleared anything endangering power lines, then crews focus on parks, walkways, and any other remaining obstacles," Laning said. Officials are now continuing to coordinate with utility providers, including Ameren Illinois and Corn Belt Energy, particularly in areas where downed trees and power lines overlap. Crews must wait for lines to be de-energized before safely removing debris. Beyond infrastructure, local agencies are also working with organizations like the Red Cross, Salvation Army, and community groups to assist vulnerable residents, including the elderly and those unable to clear the debris themselves. Residents are asked to visit any of the three government's websites at cityblm.org, normalil.gov, or McLean County, Illinois.gov, and then click on the QR code to submit their documentation of damages. Once again, residents are asked to visit any of the three government's websites for cleanup, cityblm.org, normalillinois.gov, or McLean County, Illinois.gov, and click on the QR code to submit their documentation of damages. In other news, Heartland okays maintenance. College starts work on drafting project labor agreement by Matus Janik 3 hours ago. Normal. Heartland Community College moved forward with campus maintenance projects Tuesday while beginning considerations of a project labor agreement that administrators say is based on input from local governments and unions. The Heartland Board of Trustees on Tuesday approved a grounds maintenance contract with the Chain Agencies in Lawn and Landscape of Bloomington. The agreement spans 3 years with an annual base cost of $106,000 per year with an option for an additional 2 years at a cost of $112,000 a year. The contract covers general grounds at the Normal campus and includes mowing, edging, fertilization, weed and pest control, campus cleanup, irrigation system operations and maintenance, tree management, and lining the athletic practice fields. Trustees also approved a $57,200 contract with R.W. VanCraft Painting and Decorating of Hudson for an exterior paint project at the Student Commons building. The work will cover facade elements including gutters, columns, and structural steel, and is part of the college's long-term deferred maintenance plan. In addition to those approvals, the board heard a first reading of a proposed labor agreement, signaling the start of a multi-step review process. Heartland's Vice President of Finance and Administration, Noah Lamb, said the proposed agreement was developed using input from local municipalities and labor groups, including reviewing similar agreements used by the City of Bloomington, the Town of Normal, and the McLean County governments. "We really took a lot of information from them," Lamb said, noting that the college also asked local officials about the pros and cons of these agreements. A project labor agreement is a pre-hire collective bargaining agreement between unions and a contractor that sets general terms and conditions of employment for a project, ensuring that unionized labor is used and wages are standardized. One takeaway, Lamb said, was to keep the agreement relatively broad rather than overly detailed, allowing flexibility for contractors and unions as individual projects move forward. Lamb added that the conversations with local unions helped ensure the agreement strikes the right balance between specificity and adaptability, particularly given to the complexity of capital projects. He described local government and union representatives as quote-unquote transparent and extremely helpful during the drafting process. The labor agreement is expected to return to the board for additional readings during the board's meeting in May or June, with a final vote anticipated shortly thereafterward. In government and politics, Woodford County. Woodford County Animal Control building would be finished by late fall, officials say. Steve Sine for the Pantograph 21 hours ago. Eureka! Woodford County's new animal control building could be completed by late fall or early winter. That's what Deputy Sheriff Dennis Tipsword, who is overseeing the project from the county's perspective, told the county board on Tuesday. The sheriff's office is responsible for the county's animal control operations. Tipsword had some good news for board members concerning the price tag of the building. Now that the low building subcontractors have been approved by project manager Midwest Construction Professionals of Morton, the cost for the building will be on the grounds of former church at 1301 South Douglas Road in rural Metamora and is expected to be at about $380,000 down from the estimated $425,000. There's a $515,000 budgeted for the 40 by 50 foot building, with $285,000 coming from the county and the rest from an interest-free loan from the Minson Critter Care Perpetual Charitable Trust that the county has a year to pay back. Tipsword said the $385,000 does not include a generator, fencing, or signage, so that doesn't cover the end product. But we want to get a functional building up and running as soon as we can. I'm going to be a squeaky wheel until that happens. County Board Finance Committee Chair Dave Meinhold said the $515,000 should cover everything. Site work for the building should start soon, Tipsword said, with the Lester building arriving in about 2 months. The sheriff's office will seek a setback variance from 100 to 75 feet for the building at this month's Zoning Board of Appeals meeting. Another piece of the puzzle is having about 50 loads of dirt delivered to the 3-acre parcel to raise the lot to accommodate the field bed and septic system. The church building on the grounds likely will be used by the county for offices, meeting spaces, and perhaps a voting center, county officials said. It originally was going to be renovated into the animal control building, but county officials said the cost was prohibitive. The county's animal control operations are temporarily at the home of Merle and Michelle Bluener of Eureka. The couple's kennel facility is being leased by the county. Other county business. Alan Helsel, who retired as superintendent of the Woodford County Veterans Assistance Commission on April 9th, was honored by the county board Tuesday. Hessel's replacement will be named at the commission's May 13th meeting. He had served as superintendent since 2018. Treasurer Melissa Andrews said property tax bills should be mailed out early next month. Due dates are the first Friday in June and the first Friday in September. Over the $102 million in property taxes that will be collected by the county this year, about $74 million will be for school districts Andrew said. About 5 million, or approximately 5%, will go to the county. State's Attorney Eric Gibson introduced Alex Davis, the new assistant state's attorney, who has been on the job for 2 months. Davis worked the past 6 years and is an associate attorney at Beckendorf and Beckendorf and Morton. He's a 2011 graduate of Knox College and a 2016 graduate of the St. Louis University School of Law. Tipsworth reported motor vehicle accidents in the county are about double that they were this time last year. He said he did not know a clear cause, but noted more people have been out and doing more in nicer weather. Tipsford also said Woodford County Health Department office bore the brunt of the lightning strikes that hit the county's annex complex. The board approved the low bid of $25,954 from Lee's Superior Coatings of Smithfield for restoration work on the Highway Department's South Storage Shed roof. The board also approved the low bid of $7,639 from Cleveland-based Sherwin Industries for a compound that's used to seal bridge decks, and the second lowest bid of $4,185 from Claus Plumbing and Heating of Eureka for a new furnace for the tech lab. Claus offered a more efficient furnace than the lower bidder, according to county officials. A mowing tractor that rolled over in a ditch last fall was totaled, County Engineer Conrad Moore reported. A new tractor will be purchased next year. About $50,000 in insurance money will be available for the purchase. The board approved reappointment of Matt Haynes to the Germantown Hills Fire Protection District Board for a 3-year term, and the reappointment of Corey Deckard to the Gridley Fire Protection District Board for a 1-year term. Oh, how time flies. 100 years ago, on this day of April 23rd in 1926, the Day Nursery on West Mulberry Street is a busy place these days. Miss Leela Reed, the superintendent, stated that an average of between 300 and 400 children are cared for weekly. The first children arrive at 6:30 in the morning, and with closing at 6 p.m., one may have some more idea of the amount of work and patience that is required. 75 years ago, on April the 23rd of 1951, Paul M. Bike, president of the Paul F. Bike Company, and Justin J. Akinis, chief chemist, have been nominated for the Kettle Award, the quote-unquote Oscar of the candy industries. 16 other men in the candy industry have been nominated also, and the trophy will be awarded in June. 50 years ago, on April the 23rd of 1976, testing of sewer connections in Normal has disclosed improper ones at 15 homes, proper ones at 3, and uncertain results at 3 others. The homes tested are the Lincoln area on North Walnut, Maple Beach, and Summit Streets, and the north half of Tilden Place. 25 years ago, on April 23rd, 2001, Puffabelly Station, a store featuring antiques and old books located right off of Illinois 36 at McLean County's South Edge, began in 1972 in a former railroad depot. The station had been saved as a reminder of McLean's past and moved away from the tracks because it no longer was in the rail yard when Rebecca Beeler opened the shop. She gave it a whimsical name after the railroad poem and said Angel Shoemaker, who has owned the shop nearly 19 years, although it is not called the Home Depot since 1993, it kept the name. Shoemaker moved Puffabelly Station to the turn-of-the-century house adjacent to the store's original location after Beeler died in 1990. The depot remained with the Beeler family. Today's Flick Fact. Question. On college football fields all over Illinois, spring football is ending and another season is next in August. And so we ask, can you name the only Illinois town or city where 3 Illinois universities played their first ever football games? 1, Champaign-Urbana, 2, Decatur, 3, Bloomington-Normal, and 4, suburban Chicago. Answer. It's 3, Bloomington-Normal, where both of its hometown teams, Illinois State Normal and Illinois Wesleyan, played their first games, and also the University of Illinois, which played its very first football game in Bloomington in 1890. Thank you so much for listening today. My name is Kayla Verhoeven. Please enjoy the weather, friends. Until next time for part 2 of the Pantograph, have a great day.